So for those who do not know, I am at Vanderbilt Divinity School, learning to hopefully do this more full-time instead of a pastoral intern. And so luckily, when you're in school, you get the opportunity to kind of mesh your part-time job and your student job. And so I wrote this sermon today for one of my classes. The problem is that the prompt, I was told to write a sermon to move a church from maintenance to mission, hence why we get the title. But as I was thinking about this a couple months ago, it didn't really feel right. I didn't know how to explain it, but there was something off with this prompt. I think it comes from how we define what maintenance is. For the last month, during the month of Advent, Pastor John has been discussing ways to better maintain the earth, to keep the earth healthy and thriving while we continue to live in it. Pastor John has talked about our ability to impact the world so drastically that carries a responsibility to maintain the earth. And if you see life as sacred, then this maintenance becomes a holy responsibility. So why is maintenance a bad thing? But even as we wish to maintain this earth, there are other ways of maintenance. Because we also want the earth to kind of be away from us. Just look at where we are now. We are in a building surrounded by walls and a ceiling, so nature can't come in here and ruin our piano's tuning or the electricity around here. Matthew appreciated the piano tuning, I do too. But all this is a way to prevent nature from coming in, and there are good reasons to do that. Because nature constantly bombards everything. The walls need to get prepared, and we need to protect the walls with paint. So there are necessary things for maintenance that I do believe are good. But it also is driven by a desire to keep things looking pretty. I think this comes from the fact that we live in a materialistic culture. It's no shock if I say that, maybe, I don't know. No matter how much we wish we can kind of separate ourselves from it, we like it when things look nice. Or at least, I know I do. I think it shows a sense of quality, that someone has cared for this because it's good enough to care for, to keep repairing it and making it, put the paint on and take the rust off. I mean, I hate to say it, but when I see a rundown building, you know, I don't think, wow, someone really cares about that building. I see neglect. I see the battle with nature's loss. And I think that that's kind of where maintenance comes in too. This kind of reminds me of the first car that I ever got. I was 16, and this car was a hand-me-down from my brother, who got it from my dad, who got it from my uncle. This car had been in the family for about 25 years. And this is the really cool part. It was a 1980s baby blue Toyota station wagon. There are few things cooler for a high schooler to drive. This was so cool that even though I had Facebook, I never took a picture of it. I tried to find a picture of it. I couldn't find it because I never took a picture of it. The paint was kind of beginning to rust. It had a few bumps on it, a few dents. The engine wasn't going to win any races and only had a cassette player, and this was 2006. No one used tape players then. I'm sure from the outside, it would seem that the car was neglected. But it actually had been taken care of, and it got the job done. It moved me from point A to point B, and I took immense pride in that car and was thrilled to never have to take the school bus again. It served its purpose. So bringing that back into the discussion about maintenance, I think what this means is that we can kind of separate what is the goal or purpose of our church and what is the maintenance that our church building requires. If this is the case, then the question doesn't become how we can be more effective in doing maintenance, but how we can better live into our purpose, into God's mission. And you've heard it right. I said God's mission, and you know what that means. That means we are moving on to second part of the sermon. So we're going to change gears in our 80s Toyota station wagon and move on to part two. And luckily, this part is so much easier to write because God's mission is really simple to talk about, and everyone agrees exactly what that mission is. Thank you. Yes, that's not the case. I wish. So I said I wrote this sermon for class. This is the book that I wrote the sermon on. It's about 700 pages of the one person just talking about what it means for God to have a mission for us. Because I bet I could talk to every single person here and get a slightly different answer for what you believe is God's mission. So we got to get grounded in something, because we can't just go with all the definitions. So we've all heard this once or twice, and it's Matthew 28:16-20, the Great Commission. I'm going to repeat it again, and this time as I say it, I want you to think about what is God asking us to do in this passage. So this is Matthew 28. Now the 11 disciples went to Galilee, to the mountain to which Jesus had directed them. When they saw him, they worshipped him, but some doubted. And Jesus came and said to them, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me. Go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Ghost, and teaching them to obey everything that I have commanded to you." So, I said before, this sermon was written in academia. And so we're going to look at the historical scholarly perspective of this book. But we're going to make it a little less tedious. There's a lot of words in that book. So David Bosch wrote this book. And in it, he believes that the pivotal idea of the Great Commission is that to go and make disciples. I emphasized that with my words so that it stuck out. I was hoping I would be able to do that. This is the command, to go out to all nations, because the author of Matthew understood God's love and grace is not only towards a special group of people, but it's to everyone. But this doesn't help us too much, because what is a disciple? Understanding what a disciple is, and we can understand what it means to make a disciple, and if we can even make a disciple. Throughout the Gospel of Matthew, Bosch says that Jesus sounds incredibly legalistic. There are rules and conducts for living a holy life pleasing to God. And it is expected that the disciples were going to follow those rules. That's even what disciple means. Literally translated, it means to follow. But this isn't all that was expected. Bosch writes in this book, I'm just going to leave it here. Bosch writes that he believes that the true disciples of Jesus were challenged to bear fruit. Now, we could spend an entire year really figuring it out what it means to bear fruit. But let's just focus on the idea that becoming a disciple isn't the end. It's really only the beginning. There's a continuation of the work and expectations once we become a disciple of Jesus. This work, at least in Bosch's idea, 500 years of debate with the Reformation about whether or not to follow means salvation or to believe. I'm not going to go into that. There's a lot of information there. Feel free to come and talk to me if you want about that. But there might be a continuation. And Bosch believes that the author of Matthew, when he wrote the Great Commission, believed that. He actually goes so far to say that it is unthinkable to divorce the Christian life of love and justice from being a disciple. He goes further to say, discipleship involves a commitment to God's reign, to justice and to love, and to obedience to the entire will of God. And that is a lot. Wow. I read that, and I was like, oh, that's going to be easy. It seems that living into that ideal would be very challenging, and it would take a lot of sacrifices, the entire will of God, a complete commitment to justice. But you know what the cool part is? Is that throughout all the book, throughout all of Matthew, disciples aren't alone. Jesus and his disciples share in suffering. In fact, an incredibly important aspect, Bosch says, about being a disciple is that every disciple follows the master, but never alone. Every disciple is a member of the fellowship of disciples. This is an example of this we see in Acts 2. In verse 44, we hear about the type of community that the early church had. I'm going to read it. All who believed were together and had all things in common. They would sell their possessions and goods and distribute to the proceeds to all as any had need. Day by day, as they spent much time together in the temple, they broke bread at home and ate their food with glad and generous hearts, praising God. They were doing this work together. You've heard this before. God is with us. And yes, absolutely God is with us. And I also think that we are here together in the presence of God. God has made us for community. We are social creatures, and we thrive when we are together. So there's one last maintenance I want to talk about. That of maintaining relationships, maintaining this congregation, this gathering of disciples. Relationships are so essential to carrying out God's mission. I would easily claim that this is one of the great powers of the church, that we enter in communion with all the saints and disciples of the past and of the present and even of the future. Those who have committed themselves to God's reign despite the difficulties. That's one of the reasons we're here today in this sacred place. Because we not only recognize that it's hard, but we recognize that we can't really do it alone. We need each other. And that's the beauty of maintenance. That's why I had a problem with the prompt to begin with. Yes, as we seek to maintain our relationships, it provides us with a strong connection and a wonderful gathering place where we can learn to struggle with living out Jesus' teachings. But I think the prompt was on to something, because this is the tricky part. I think that connection is so beautiful, such a fabric of our life, that we mistake it for God's mission. The relationships and the buildings and all that we begin to rely on to carry out God's mission becomes so wonderful, such a tangible representation of God's kingdom on earth, because it is, that we begin to forget that not everyone has those things. Sometimes we get too comfortable in our maintenance. We begin to build a stronger support system for ourselves and kind of forget about those who don't have it. Boss says this is not what being a disciple is about. He calls us to make disciples sensitive to the needs of those around them. So the problem is not maintenance. Maintenance is fine. The problem is what or who is driving our motivation to continue maintenance. To wrap up, the purpose of our maintenance is important. If we only build a stronger connection between us, this wonderful building that we are proud of, then that just becomes a maintenance for the benefit of ourselves, and that kind of makes me sad. Because people are suffering. There will be trials and challenges that get in our way, and frustrations that we experience. But the good news is that we are not alone in those. God is with us, and we are with us. God has blessed us with a beautiful church and a loving congregation. God has blessed us with each other, a connection that we rely on through all the sufferings of life that we experience. And God has blessed us with the opportunity to share that connection with others so that God's reign of love and justice may flourish in this world. Amen.